Hi and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on Aw Paw's Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and thank you to all the wonderful pet lovers out there joining us today. We have a wonderful show. I'm going to go over some announcements first, and we have a United Pet Honoring Ceremony, June 9th, coming up. And this is a time where anybody can send in a name of a pet to be honored. And I do this periodically throughout the year because a lot of times we just don't have a way to honor those pets that have been so important in our lives and have meant so much to us. So I offer this service. It's free. It's free to send in a pet name. And we have people from all over the world send in names of their pets and pictures to be included. It's a very simple ceremony. It's free to call in to listen to it. And I invite you, if you have that special pet in your heart that you would like to express honor and thanks, I invite you to send in the name of your pet. And you can do that. You can go to pethonoring.com and find out more information, or you can send it directly to me in an email, and that would be pets@pethonoring.com. So thank you for considering that. It really is a wonderful way to express love and honor for your pets. And pets, the more and more pets become a part of our family and in our lives, there's a growing need to take care of them on a deeper level. And there's growing interest and resources out there for taking care of them through all parts of their life. And then, and especially now emerging, are a lot of wonderful resources to help our pets during end of life. And with us today is Heather Merrill. She is the founder and owner of New England Pet Hospice and Home Care. She offers this service and has a wonderful website of also other resources. And she has a great, great newsletter that comes out with wonderful tips. So joining us today here is Heather. Welcome, Heather. It's wonderful to have you here. Okay, so we seem to have lost Heather, but I will talk a little bit about her and her services. Her website is Wag Pearl Purr Smile. She's with the New England Pet Hospice and Home Care. They offer services for helping with pets at the end of their life and providing comfort. And they can do this in the comfort of your own home, in the pet's own home. And I'm going to check with Doug to see if we've gotten Heather back on the line yet. Okay.
I'm getting her right now.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Well, just wanted to check with that. And I will share a little bit about her and her services. She does do, if you get a chance, go to her site and sign up for the newsletter, because she sends out wonderful tips and resources to keep everyone aware of what's out there in the world of helping with our pets. And there are a lot of items and support services there. Heather, did you get to join us?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, wonderful. Yay. That's all right. These things happen. So tell us a little bit about you and how you got started in all of this.
Well, thank you for having me join you.
Sure.
I had experience in human hospice with my own family members. I had two family members die with human hospice at home. And I was by their side throughout their illness and also at their death. And I had a great deal of respect and admiration for the hospice workers who provided care for our family. And when I got to a point in my life, midlife, like so many of us do, and started thinking about what is it that I want to do and what kind of a legacy would I like to leave, I thought that I would like to do some work in hospice. So I became a hospice volunteer and went through the training program and started volunteering in human hospice, and just really loved it. Some people think it's depressing, but for me it was a time when I could really give back and make a significant difference in people's lives and their families' lives. And so, like many of us do, especially I think as women at midlife, we think about, what have I done so far and what would I like to do for the second half of my life? And I was really thinking about going into human hospice as either a human hospice social worker or a chaplain when a neighbor and a friend of mine had a dog who was dying of cancer. And she was really struggling. What I said to her was, gosh, you really need hospice. That would be really helpful to you. And tried to help her find hospice for her dog, which I assumed incorrectly existed and would be available for her. And that's really what started me on a journey close to 10 years ago of thinking about, what we need for our pets and how to take care of them at the end of life.
Wow, that's wonderful. And I know there have been a lot of people and resources increased in that area, but how special and comforting it is to be able to tenderly care for our beloved pets, during a very difficult time.
So, it's so important because they are family members to us, and we spend so much time with them, and we devote, our hearts and our souls and everything to them. And while we know that they have a shorter lifespan than we do, still, when that time comes, it's very difficult, and we want to provide them with not only the best medical care like we would a family member, but also the best care in general, thinking about what's important to them, what's important to their quality of life, what's worth doing to prolong life and what isn't valuable to prolong life at the cost of suffering. Those questions are really hard for us to answer in human medicine, and they're also very hard for us to answer with our animals.
Yeah, and you have a lot of really wonderful articles and blog posts on your website that, really do try to give people a lot of information and resources. And in one of your articles, you wrote that your work at New England Pet Hospice teaches you something new every day, and that you consider open-mindedness and open-heartedness the most critical qualities of your work.
Absolutely. Every animal and every family teaches us something. And, one of the things that's most important to me and our staff, and it's very much a human hospice principle, is that we don't come with the answers. We come there to prepare families to reach, to find their answers and to help them reach their goals. And even when we talk to them on the phone or email with them to start before we go to visit, we might have in our minds an idea of, okay, this is what's going on with this animal, and this is the kind of things we might do for them. And when we get there, the picture's very different. We have to go into every situation. It's really important. We go into every situation with an open mind and an open heart to say, what is it that this animal needs and this family needs, and how can we help them get there? And not with preconceived notions about this is what should happen or this is the path that you should go down, but really, really going and listening with an open heart and figuring out what's important to this individual animal and this individual family.
Yeah, and anyone who's been there, I think, really recognizes and knows that it's different for everybody, and it's different for every animal and every situation, and sometimes it changes.
Absolutely. About half of our families in the hospice have pets who are euthanized, and about half of them have animals who die naturally. I say naturally in quotes because, of course, we're providing constant care and particularly pain control. So it's not like sending them off into the wild to die a natural death, but meaning without euthanasia. But for many of them, they come to us with an idea of, I'm definitely going to euthanize or I'm definitely not going to euthanize. And that changes as it goes. And so sometimes the animal makes their own decision. The family might decide, we're going to have a euthanasia this evening. And when they tell that to their animal, the animal says, no, thank you, and dies on their own before that. I mean, there's lots and lots of stories of animals doing that. Or we have lots of people tell us about how they decided to euthanize their animal, and they put them in the car, and they died on the car ride there. And on the other hand, we also have families who come to us who are really, really don't want to euthanize, but it becomes clear that we can't control pain or we can't do what's right by that animal, and so it's necessary to euthanize. So very often families come to us with ideas about how it's going to go, and usually it doesn't go like that, because the animal has their own needs and their own direction, and the key is to follow what it is that they need.
Yeah, so the key is to stay open and follow and allow, it sounds like.
Yeah, for the family to be open-minded too, we say to them, listen, I hear your preference for this, and we're going to try to make that happen. But, there are certain things that are very important to us, to our organization. This is what I say to all of our clients, is there are three requirements for not euthanizing. One is that the animal not be in pain. We have really good pain medications and interventions we can use. So it's almost always possible to control pain, but not always. Two is that they have to be kept clean and sanitary. So it's very common for older animals and animals with illness to have some incontinence or to be down and not moving very much. So we have to prevent pressure sores and urine scald. And so those two things are really important. And three, that there's someone available to provide love, attention, and care to the animal. Many of us have had to work outside the home and had to leave our animals at home, and that's okay when they're young and healthy. When they're older, somebody needs to be there to check in on them, whether it's the family or neighbors or friends or us, as a hospice. But somebody needs to be checking in on the dog or cat during the day. They can't be left alone for long periods of time when they're at this
stage. I think that's important for us to realize, and then also realize that there are resources out there, such as your services that can provide that and can help with that.
Right. So for us, we say if you can provide those three things, then there's no moral obligation to euthanize because you're tending to the key needs of the animal. And then from there, it's really what is right for this animal and for your family. But those three key things are really essential to providing good care at the end of life.
Yeah, they sound like wonderful guidelines and a framework to work from in assessing the situation. So tell us, what would you say? What is the most important thing that you do?
The number one thing that clients tell us after they've met us, usually for the initial consult, is I don't feel alone anymore. We are there 24/7. We've been through this before. We have seen it go many different directions. And the single most important thing we do is just be a knowledgeable presence for the family. So they can turn to us with questions. They can bounce ideas off of us. They don't feel judged. They don't feel silly or stupid or crazy for the things that they tell us. And so that is critically important because most people have a gut sense of what's the right thing to do, for them and for their animal. And I tell people that your gut feeling is not some superstitious emotional thing. It's really a culmination of you taking in lots of minute objective criteria. Like, how's he looking at me? What are ears doing? What is his tail doing? And so you're taking in lots and lots of objective pieces of information without even realizing it. And those culminate in a gut feeling about what to do or what not to do. And what I say to people is, nobody ever says, I listened to my gut and I wish I hadn't, right? People say,
right,
I felt in my gut that I should or shouldn't do this, and I ignored it or I talked myself out of it, and I wish I hadn't. And so, developing that strength to say, you know what, my gut just tells me this is not the right answer for me or my animal, whatever it might be, and I need to seek a second opinion or get some more information or find some help to do something different. And so we really support our families in that. We say, you know, how are you feeling about this? What is your gut telling you? And that leads them to an answer that is right for them and for their animal that they can feel good about years later.
Well, I think it is so important to have that sounding board and to talk it out because so many of us get in that place where it's too close in the inner world and without being able to chat with somebody or verbalize it, then it doesn't become as clear, and we question ourselves. And And I think that is a wonderful, wonderful resource. And I got into the pet honoring work because of a very unfortunate death with a pet. And I did. I felt all alone with it. And it's a terrible place to be. And if you can, like you're doing, provide resources and services to be there for people and to help them not feel alone during this, it is it's a weight off, and it's lovely.
It is, absolutely. And for a lot of people, you know, who are you going to turn to as your sounding board? You can turn to your friends and family who don't have animals of their own. They don't get the depth of the connection. Or you turn to friends and family who do or have had pets, and usually your friends and family who have had pets of their own have had a loss and have done something. So, you know, our MO with animals up until this time has been, you know, at the first sign of illness or at some point down the progress of illness, it's an accepted fact that we're going to have a euthanasia. And so, so those people that you're sounding board, they're bringing their experience to
right.
it and everything they've been told about it. And so it's very often the case that people feel the need to not just listen, but to tell you what to do or to give you advice. And they're going to do that based on their experience. Whereas
right.
pet hospice is a relatively new phenomenon, so not a lot of people have a lot of experience with that. So you're not going to necessarily get the full breadth of options from them.
Right, right, right. It's wonderful to have and know about, you know, expert resources out there that are familiar with the choices, the options, services, things to consider, and I think it's just absolutely wonderful and pioneering, and I want everybody to know about it because I think it's it is amazing. So thank you for that. But we're going to take a short break. We are chatting with Heather Merrill of New England Pet Hospice. And this is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how we can help each other with this. And we'll be right back. Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network. And here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands that pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com, and the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. All right, wonderful, and welcome back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, L.E. Merriweather, and we are chatting with Heather Merrill of New England Pet Hospice and Home Care. And we are going to chat now. Heather, tell us some things we can do to help each other. I mean, many of us just don't know what to do when a friend or family member loses a pet or is caring for a chronically ill pet. You know, what's some good advice here?
Well, there are a number of things. I mean, what we were talking about before the break about non-judgmental listening is one of the key things, is really letting people have a sounding board to talk through what they're feeling and without feeling like you have to tell them what to do. And that's very hard because we're raised in a culture that wants to fix things and wants to give answers and thinks that that's the best way to support people. But often what they need is just someone to deeply listen to them, so to ask questions to further their thinking and further their train of thought without necessarily injecting advice and telling people what to do. And that's so important both when they're caring for the animal and after the animal's passed, is just being there so that they can talk. And being willing to say, I don't know. You know, when the animal's sick and they say, I don't know what to do, you could say, I don't know either, but here's what I can do to offer to help. I can research some options. I can take care of your human children while you go to appointments. You know, there's lots of things that you can offer to do while they are caring for their sick animal. When the animal's passed, understand that it's a family member. You're going to grieve the animal the way you grieve a human. You know, the sort of general thought is that it takes about a year of actively grieving a human to get over the completely raw feelings. And the research with animal loss is about 9 months. And the reason that is that you have to get through all the seasons and all the holidays. So we used to take the Christmas picture in front of this place. We used to take our summer vacation here, and he loved swimming in the lake. And all of those things are going to remind you of your animal and what you've lost. And so if you have a friend or family member who's lost an animal, understand that it's completely normal for them to still have sad moments 6 months later, 9 months later. People don't understand that. We expect people to go back to work the next day, and you better not be crying. And even our closest friends, 3 weeks or a month later, wonder if there's something wrong, if someone's still really upset about their animal passing. Where that's really normal, and for them to know that there's that you support them, and that you don't think they're crazy will be very helpful to them in their grieving process.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful perspective because, you know, we as a society really haven't understood that love is love and grief is grief, and that it's not going to fix itself overnight, and that it's a process. And when
Absolutely.
We lose a pet, that it could be weeks, it could be months, it could be sometimes years, you know, that we're still
Absolutely.
Feeling this loss.
And especially, it can be very traumatizing if someone feels like they didn't do right by their animal in the end. Whatever happened, whether they rushed them to the emergency room, whether they euthanized, whether they chose not to euthanize and the death was not as painless as they would like it to have been, you know, whatever it may have been, if they feel like they didn't do right by their animal at the end, that can be very traumatizing to people. For years and decades later, we see people who really remember. I mean, I think the worst case scenario and the thing that we try to avoid in all respects is, you know, a crisis in the middle of the night. You rush to the emergency room. They say there's nothing we can do. You have a euthanasia in the emergency room. You leave the animal there to be cremated. You get home 3 hours later and you say, what the heck just happened?
Yeah, exactly.
And there's no acceptance of the huge loss you've just had. There's no funeral ritual. There's no wake. And people are just left, you know, sort of dizzy, just feeling like, I don't know what just happened, but that didn't feel right to me. And that's very, very traumatizing for people. Sometimes people will say, I could never have another animal in my life because that was so awful. And I think that's so sad because they're such wonderful parts of our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, with my experience with Kelsey, it's exactly what happened. And it felt very cold. It felt, you know, and it didn't feel right because she was such a love and such a part of my life. I thought this was just really cold, and it didn't feel right, and I just didn't understand that we didn't have resources or services or, you know, things out there to assist on an emotional and a spiritual level, and it was devastating.
Absolutely, and I wrote a blog post about this, you know, surviving the decision to euthanize, because people come to us and they carry this with them, this guilt or this trauma with them, that they just feel like that wasn't the right thing to do, and they doubt themselves, you know, I couldn't have another pet because I couldn't do that to them, or, you know, I didn't exercise good judgment, or I was her mom and I should have stood up for her and I didn't. You know, those things we carry with us the scars, but I would say to people, be kind to yourself. I know that what you did out of love, and I know that you did what you thought was the best for her, and maybe it was the best for her, but, you know, forgive yourself for that, because you did the best you could under the circumstances with what you had.
I think we really can be ruthless with ourselves, and that we do, like you said, need to understand that we made the decision, you know, out of love, what we had at the time, and not torment ourselves about that.
Absolutely. And with the information that you had, You know, I am sure that you did not say to the vet, what's the worst thing I could do, right? Or, you know, what's the coldest thing or the quickest thing or the cheapest thing? You know, you said, what's the best thing for Kelsey? What's the best thing to do in this circumstance? And they said to you, you know, this is what I would do if I were you, you know, or something like that. Or this is the option, these are the options that we have, and none of them are good. You know, so you work with what you have, and we just have to be kinder to ourselves.
Yeah, and I think another important thing to remember, or you can still do a ceremony to honor your pet. It didn't matter whether they were last week, last month, last year, or it was a special childhood pet, that still have that moment of honoring and having that peaceful expression of thanks. And people don't always realize that that's still a resource for them.
And how hugely powerful that can be. People often underestimate how hugely powerful it can be. I mean, we have had funerals. Every culture and every time has had a funeral ritual. No matter where you are in the world, all the way back to Neanderthal times, we have evidence of funerals. Why is that?
Yeah.
You know, we need to honor our dead and dying, and we have a need to do and to find a way to honor them and to do something before we take the next step forward. And sometimes, like you said, even weeks, months, or years later, having some sort of ritual that you find meaningful, that you find honors your animal, can be a key point for a key turning point for you. And so it should absolutely not be underestimated how important that is.
Yeah, I think it can be absolutely powerful and healing, and it could settle your soul. You know, it can give you that peace because it is a way to express honor and thanks for that soul and all the gifts that they gave. So I do want to help
find
One
thing that's hard about animals is we don't have a set ritual,
right,
a funeral ritual for them. But on the other hand, that's also a gift, because then you're not confined by what you think a funeral should be. So
right,
whether
we
it's
want.
Planting a memorial garden, taking a hike in the mountains, setting something afloat in the water, whatever it might be that feels meaningful to you and respectful to your animal, you're free to do that. You don't have the constraints of tradition.
Right. We can do what we want. And I want to talk and bring in how do we help children with the loss of a pet? You know, many of us get stuck and we don't know how. Should we address it? Should we not address it? You know, maybe we even sometimes underestimate what they're aware of or what they're struggling with. So what are some good suggestions for that?
Well, it's a good lead-in from the previous question because, you know, children have a need to honor also. And the two key things with children are, one, always be honest. Never tell them something that's not true. When you tell a child that your animal was put to sleep, they can sometimes develop phobias about themselves going to sleep. You know, when
right.
you try to use a euphemism to explain what has happened instead of the honest truth, that's very difficult for them and leads to problems. And when you cover it up or you minimize it, their imagination is almost always going to be worse than what the reality is.
Right.
So
right.
it's much better to be honest with them. So number one, always be honest. And number two, follow their lead. If they're asking questions, answer them honestly. If they're not asking questions, don't push it on them. So different children at different ages, they go through mourning in different, they understand death in different ways as they go through their life and their growth and development. So younger children may not understand it at all. They may accept a very simple explanation, whereas your teenager might really question, you know, is there God? Is there heaven? Is there a soul? You know, all, you know, much deeper questions. So depending upon where they are in their development and also their temperament, they may have different needs and different questions. And the most important thing is to listen to what they're asking you and answer them honestly. You said earlier that that loss is loss, which is, you know, just a huge thing I want to pull out, because that's so true. And we as parents, I have a daughter myself, we want to protect our children from from seeing the animal age, decline, have disease, die. We want to save them that pain, but we're not helping them. Because as you said, loss is loss, and learning how to care for a being, whether it's a human or animal at the end of life, how to mourn and grieve in a thoughtful, meaningful, healthy way, those are learned skills. And the more you do it, the better you get at it. And so whether it's a loss of a person, an animal, a job, a dream, a part of your body, whatever it might be, that's loss, and you're going to mourn and grieve it in a similar kind of way. So what we can do with it for our children is to be honest with them, to meet them where they are, to answer their questions, to include them in a funeral ritual. Ritual is hugely important for children so that they feel like they honored their animal. They participated in a ritual that was meaningful to them. And let them see it. The people that we see in our service who have the hardest time dealing with death are those who are sheltered from it as children. It's sort of the opposite of what you might expect. We have people in our service whose parents killed themselves in front of the client, and they deal with death better than in a more healthy way than people whose parents told them the dog went to the farm or grandma, moved to Florida and they never see her again. The people who are sheltered from death are very traumatized by that. They never really got to participate in it. They didn't see it. And their imagination and their feeling of being left out and not given a chance to mourn so much worse than the reality of it.
Wow. So if we think that we're protecting them by not exposing them to, what really happened or not discussing it and putting it, away and not bringing it up, we're really not doing them a good service because we're not teaching them how to process grief or how to handle what they're feeling and going through.
Exactly. You're missing a huge teaching opportunity. I tell parents that, this is the last great gift your pet gives to your child. You probably got a pet, or if you had the animal when the child was born, you thought, boy, this is going to teach my child so much about love and respect and responsibility. But people don't often think it's going to teach my child about healthy grieving, which the animal will. It's really the last great gift that your pet gives to your children if you allow it to happen. And I'm, like I said, I'm a parent myself. I understand. I don't want to see my child upset. I don't want to see her distraught. But she needs to be able to feel those feelings, and she needs to know how to express them, that it's okay, this is what we do. It's so important for parents to model, just like in any other respect, to model healthy skills. So to say to our children, I'm crying because I'm sad, or I feel really frustrated right now that we couldn't do X, Y, and Z, or I'm really angry because of this. And when I have these feelings, this is what I do to process them in a healthy way. Here are some things.
Right.
Children see what we do. If you hide your tears and your feelings from your children think that it's something to be ashamed of and that they shouldn't do it either. So, we need to model healthy grieving skills and teach them, I'm not surprised that you're sad and upset because, Fluffy was such a huge part of your life, your best friend. Our children develop very, very close relationships to the animals, and we need to be respectful of that.
Yeah, I think that is wonderful advice, and I know there are a lot of listeners out there that are shaking their head going, yeah, and I can't tell you how many people I chat with and clients who were traumatized as a child when they later found out, the real story or what happened, and they weren't given the opportunity to grieve or express or share their feelings, and they, like you said, end up being embarrassed or not able to process them. So I think that is wonderful advice.
And include them in the funeral ritual. I mean, we have lots of ideas for talking to your children and say, okay, we're going to have a funeral. What would you like to do? And whether they want to, color the box that the hamster's buried in, or you can get latex rubber balloons, which, are not dangerous to wildlife, and write a wish on them and let them go. or, you know, take a walk. We had one family, when I was talking to them about funeral rituals, who said, yeah, we took the whole family on a walk in the conservation lands with breadcrumbs, and we talked, we left a trail of breadcrumbs behind and talked about the good things that we knew, that we thought about our dog and what we'd experienced while leaving something behind for the wildlife. And it was so beautiful and so meaningful to the whole family.
Oh, I love that.
So, you know, talking to your children, they probably have ideas about what they'd like to do. And by talking to them and letting them be a part of it, you're honoring your children, too, and telling them that they matter and their feelings matter and they can be a part of this also.
I love that. I love that. And the only other thing I would really want to highlight is you mentioned, you know, if their hamster died, or that this is really beyond cats and dogs. The children,
yes,
and we as adults, you know, can feel great love for any being, any animal, hamster, fish, turtle, you know. I did an honoring ceremony for, you know, a frog. You know, it love is love.
Right. It's a relationship. That's what matters, and the depth of that relationship. And you can have that relationship with any being. You know, I often talk about beings because that word encompasses all kinds of animals and humans together. And it's really the loss of a being, whatever form it might come in, that is critical.
Yeah, and I think it's important to recognize that with ourselves as well as with children. So we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a minute. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network, and we're here with Heather Merrill. And when we come back, we're going to talk about things we can do to care for ourselves. Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Honor Your Pet understands that pets are our family and honors our relationship with them and all they give. The website is pethonoring.com, and the email address is pets@pethonoring.com. Let me know what you need and how I can help. All right, welcome back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we are here chatting with Heather Merrill of New England Pet Hospice and Home Care, discussing end-of-life care for our pets and how to better handle and deal with grief. And a lot of times we get overwhelmed when we're caring for an ill or chronically ill pet, and also with the grief process, we struggle. Can you enlighten us or give us some tips on how we can better take care of ourselves during this time?
Absolutely. That's so important. And one of the things that you mentioned early in that question was chronically ill. And that's the home care part of our name, because about a third of the animals that we take care of do not have are not actively dying. They might have, especially cats with chronic renal failure, dogs with degenerative myelinopathy, animals that are paralyzed or have diabetes. You know, they have special needs, which can be completely exhausting, especially because they're not terminal, and they go on for years and years, and you can't get a break. And also animals that are, you know, quite ill, and we don't know how much time we have left with them, and you're with them around the clock, and it's 24-hour care, and it's completely exhausting. And, you know, we need to take breaks. It's very important. Sleep really matters for our emotional well-being and our physical well-being and our ability to make good decisions. And our relationships with those we love and care about matters, with our spouse, with our children, with our friends. And so getting a break from caregiving is really important. Whether you have a professional caregiver like us come to take care of your animal, or you have a friend or a family member and you say, can you come over for an hour so I can get out, or I can go to this meeting. So You know, making sure that we take some time for ourselves. Exercise is also really important. If you have any kind of, you know, usual practice like meditation, yoga, going to an exercise class, those things are important. And often we feel when we have a chronically ill animal or we have an animal that's in that somewhere in the dying process, like, I'm being selfish by doing these things.
Yeah.
I should be with my animal all the time. I can't leave. Nobody else can take care of him or her the way I can. We get into that pattern of not taking care of ourselves, which just escalates and gets worse and worse. And the less we give it credence that we need some things to, the more we take away from ourselves, the more we drain ourselves, and we need to take that time away. And when you take, even if you feel like, okay, I can only take 15 minutes to take a shower or to take a nap or something like that, but I'll have somebody else watch them, then you realize, it's okay, I can do this. He or she's going to be okay. And when I come back, I'm recharged. One of the things that can happen a lot is we get so exhausted from the caretaking that we end up resenting the animal for, you know, unconsciously for all the time that we're taking. And that's a very destructive emotional path to go down, because we want them to live, but we're so exhausted we can't go on like this, you know, those kind of things. That's not a good relationship to have. So by taking care of ourselves, we can come back to the animal refreshed and recharged and say, okay, you know, I know this is a limited time. This is what I'm going to do, and this is what I can give to you. So very, very important to take time to care for ourselves and to know that that's not selfish, that's not unfair, we're not being a bad parent, that those things are important for our ability to care for the animal for the long term and feel good about the decisions we're making.
Yeah, I think that's hugely important for us to recognize and try to keep in mind during that time. We also don't want to get ourselves sick, you know, and we don't want to get ourselves run down, and because that's just going to make us feel bad and worse, and taking care of yourself is hugely important. And
absolutely.
I think it's okay to remember it's okay to ask for help, like you said.
Yeah, lots of people really want to help you, but they don't know how.
Right.
You know, we had a blog post recently, which I know that you saw, was, you know, 25 things you can do to help somebody. Often people will say, let me know if there's anything I can do to help. And they genuinely want to help, but they have no idea how. So when you reach out to them and say, could you come over and sit with my animal while I take a shower? Could you help me run this errand or go buy this dog food? They're usually really happy to do it. They want to be able to do something. They just don't know what. So, you know, go ahead and reach out and ask. And if the first person says no, ask somebody else. You know, because there are your loved ones, your friends, your family, they really do want to help. And so if you can give them something very specific, this is what I need, can you do this for me? Most of them will jump at the opportunity.
Yeah. And, you know, I think initially sometimes we don't ask for help because we think, oh, you know, I don't want to be a burden or I don't want to be in a position. And, you know, people, even though they're saying, you know, I want to help, you know, we doubt ourselves. But I think if we just remember, if, you know, when the roles are reversed, we want to help. We want to be able to do something because it makes us feel good, and it makes us, you know, feel good to know that there are things that we can do to help comfort, you know, our friend and our loved one during this time. And it is good for us to remember that when we're on the side that needs some help too.
Right. So think about if my sister said to me, could I come over and stay with her dog while she runs, her dog who's very ill, while she runs some errands, I would say, absolutely, I'd be happy to do that.
Right.
In fact, like you said, I'd feel good about it. I'd be glad there was something I could do. So sometimes if you switch it around and say, well, how would I feel if somebody asked me to do this, you can see it more clearly.
Yeah, so I think that's some great advice, is to take care of yourself and let others know how they can help you and what would be good for you during those tough times. So that's wonderful. So what are things that we can do to help our older pets? how are their needs, how do they change? How are their needs different as they age that we may not be aware of or realize?
Well, one of the huge things for our animals is to keep them the right weight. It's, you know, the same as us.
Mm.
Especially as they get older, they move less, we're still feeding them the same food, they gain weight. Or we think, oh, well, it's okay because he's older, he can have this extra strip of bacon. And all of a sudden, they're obese and they're too heavy. That's really hard for pets, just like it is for us. It exacerbates joint issues, back issues, blood sugar level issues, heart issues. So all the same things that cause problems in us, really pronounced in our animals, especially if you think about their lives, it's really much more accelerated than ours. So they get old much more quickly. So it's not being cruel or mean to cut their portions back, to feed them more leanly, and to make sure that their weight is a good weight. That's one of the key things that you can really do to help your animal as they age. Feeding them a good diet, and some key supplements like fish oil, a joint supplement if they're having any issues with joints. There's some really good key supplements that can be very helpful. And making sure that you have identified good healthcare providers who can help your animal. It's never too early to identify people who can be helpful to you, whether it's, what's the specialty hospital here, where's an acupuncturist I might be able to use, who provides massage, who provides overnight pet sitting for senior animals. Identify those resources that are available to you before you need them. And you may find that a lot of those things also are great preventatives. Getting your animal regularly massaged when they're older can help them really, feel more comfortable. Getting them the right amount of exercise so that they have muscles to support their joints, also very important. So a lot of the same things that are important for humans are really important for animals, but we just have to think about their life as accelerated.
Right. That's wonderful. It reminds me, I saw a video or a DVD on how to stretch your dog.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great because it's the same thing. Stretching is important for us as it is for our pets, too. But I had not considered that before. Exercise.
Yeah, and there's great, there's wonderful work being done in physical therapy for animals. Particularly dogs, some for cats, but particularly dogs, a lot of great physical therapy. So it used to be, even 10 years ago that you'd do a surgery, you might do a ligament repair surgery on the dog, and they'd send you home and say, keep him in a crate for so many times. Now it's, get him into physical therapy, into rehab, and here are some exercises you can do to help strengthen the muscles. Just like humans now, you have a surgery, you go into physical therapy for many of them to help stretch and to help strengthen. And those are key things also.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I love the idea of the dog or pet massages too, because that's important for us as it is for them to keep them mobile and healthy.
And it really, and just like in humans, it releases endorphins and so can have, there's a lot of research on the benefits of massage therapy. And we use, there's also a particular kind of massage therapy called T-Touch, pioneered by Linda Kellington-Jones, which you may have heard of. And it's a specific kind of gentle neuromuscular massage that we can teach family members to do with their animals that's very relaxing for them, that's great for animals that are anxious or animals that are in pain or animals that are nearing the end of life. And so we use a lot of T-Touch in our practice because it's something we can do easily, and we can show family members how to do. And it doesn't require, taking years of massage, animal massage therapy courses or any particular strength. So T-Touch is really wonderful. I encourage people to look into it. It's two capital T's, O-U-C-H, and if you search for it on YouTube, you'll find Linda Tellington-Jones with demonstrations of how to do it. You can do it right at home with your animal.
No, that's wonderful. And I think that's the one that's not, this big, deep tissue massage. It's a very gentle circular motion. Is that right?
Correct. It's a circle and a quarter.
Nice.
And there's something about that quarter. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But there's something about that. And you don't go over the same spot, and you're not trying to get it deep. But there's something about the way that stimulus, they've actually done quite a bit of peer-reviewed research on the benefits of T-Touch and found it to be, you know, very beneficial. And so there's something about, and not going over the same spot, that stimulates some neurons in the brain that really set off a deep kind of relaxation. And I had the privilege and pleasure of having Linda Tellington Jones actually work on me. I and one of my colleagues were at a conference where she was speaking, and it does feel wonderful, I can say. It is deeply relaxing.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That's a great resource for us to know about and to go out and explore. So,
and it's free, and it doesn't cause any harm, so you know, you can decide on that.
Right. Right, yeah, and I wanted people to know that it's not, sometimes that deep tissue, you know, animal or muscle massage can be really tiring, and, you know, this is very doable, it's very accessible, it's very beneficial, like you said. So, awesome resource. So what, I think we have time for one more question here. What is it you most want people to know?
I want people to know that they have options. That that if somebody says to you this is the only thing you can do, it's probably not true. That you almost always have time where you can, even if it's only 5 minutes, to think about it, to do a gut check, to say I want to consult somebody else, I want to get a second opinion, I want to talk to somebody else. You know, there's something here that doesn't feel right to me. You know, to really trust your instincts and to know that you have options. That's the number one thing. The number two thing I do want people to know is that the term hospice in veterinary medicine is not a defined term. So unlike in human medicine where you say hospice, you get a particular program, with animals, the hospice can mean anything. So there, you know, make sure you ask questions so you understand what you're getting. There are very few services like ours that are based on human hospice and have a truly interdisciplinary team. Most of the hospices in the country are mobile veterinarians who might have some team members who come with them, who may do some amount of palliative care before euthanasia, but many of them, it's primarily home euthanasia. Some hospices are rescues or sanctuaries for older animals. Some are pet sitters who particularly like animals. So there's a wide range of people using that term. So don't assume that it means anything in particular. Make sure you ask questions so that you understand what that service provider has available, when they're available to you,
yeah,
and what it matches what you need.
Okay, great. So the main point is to let people know there are options, there are resources, there are a lot of methods of support out there. And so how can I find out more about you?
So you can find out more about New England Pet Hospice and Home Care on our website, which is www.nepethospice.com. So there's a lot of information on our website. As you mentioned, they can sign up for our newsletter there, get back issues, and look up other topics if they want them and get the newsletter going forward. We send it out twice a month. We work very hard to make sure that it does have good substantive information, not just fluff, there.
Yeah, that's...
And people should feel free to also email us. You can email me directly at heather@newenglandpethospice.com, all spelled out. And we try to answer all the emails. We do have what we call tip sheets, which are single sheets of tips for many of the things we talked about today, including what to say and not to say to a grieving animal lover, how to help your children through loss, 25 things you can do to help someone who has an animal who is ill. We have a Bill of Rights for grieving pet lovers that comes from a wonderful grief therapist, Marty Tuesley. So we have a number of resources that are free that we're happy to email to you. So if people have specific questions, we'll try to answer them or provide them with the information.
Well, that's wonderful, and I encourage everyone to sign up for your newsletter and go to your website, check out all of the wonderful resources. Thank you, Heather, so much for being here. It was a pleasure chatting with you, and Lots of blessings to you and your work and everything you're doing to help our pet owners and our loving pets out there.
Thank you so much, Leigh, for helping us spread the word. That's the most important thing, is that people don't even know it exists, so they don't know what to look for. So our goal is to get word out there that such things exist and people should be looking for them.
Yes, I think it can be wonderfully helpful. So thank you. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening and for joining us on Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Leigh Merriweather, and join us in our next session in 2 weeks. Thank you so much. Lots of love to everybody. Thank you for joining us. Please visit pethonoring.com or email me at pethonoring.com.